Over these next weeks, we're going to explore the changes taking place in our lives. I think before March, I'd only ever had one Zoom conversation. I certainly wasn't addicted to making videos or doing audios. When my sister came the other day, we huddled together in the garden. It was really cold, while the doors of the house were resolutely closed. We're not the first generation to experience unimaginable change. In 1939, my dad was an apprentice electrical engineer working in a power station. My mum was washing up chemical bottles in a large boot store in Glasgow, trying to avoid the rats. When war came, everything was swept away. Suddenly my dad was doing maintenance work on Hurricanes and Spitfires, and my mum was on the Scottish hillside observing the uncertain training flights and new pilots. Eventually their postings brought them together and a romance was born. Some years later, I was born. There are changes that just happen to us. There are changes we actively choose. Even when things happen to us that we have no control over, we still have a choice about how we respond. The shock of coronavirus is still reverberating in our lives. For some of us, uncertainty hangs in the air like a fog around our future work and our income. How safe is it to go out? Will the shops where we browsed and the cafes and pubs where we met with our friends open their doors again? Will anything be the same again? When everything is thrown up in the air like this, it's not surprising that some things will have fallen down in new places. Our relationships, perhaps. The intensity of being together in our households may have deepened bonds, it may have exposed cracks. Perhaps our sense of what's important or what we want out of life has shifted. We might even have begun to discover something more of who we are, or even who we're not. There's a larger picture too. The ways of life we've drifted into collectively over time, I think, are coming into question. Is it time now to meet the challenge of a simpler existence that's built more on restraint rather than continual acquisition of stuff? Is this the season to put away swords and turn them into plowshares? When we reflect on recent events, I can't breathe. Can we go on? Do we want to go on defining our identity in opposition to other people? Is it time to recognise how we're connected with one another? And it has to be that way, across streets and nations and skin colours and religions. And the planet, too, asks our care. It's beautiful, it's fragile. Did we need this unpleasant experience to make us aware of how our lives have gone awry, out of sync? And if we're going to be part of a change, you or I, what will be our part and how will we know this? Change is in the air. We probably don't know where it's going or how life will be different or how to respond to its challenge. And it's certainly not easy living with uncertainty. Change is costly. It's almost as if we have to juggle losing the old, and that's so even when we're choosing to do something differently ourselves, and also to juggle adjusting to a new situation, having to do the two together. And at this moment, it may well be we don't know what we're adjusting to. Does it have a shape yet that we can get hold of? One response when we're met with uncertainty might be to try and batten down the hatches and hold on tight to what we've always done and always known. Even when life isn't that brilliant, the familiar has its lure. At least we know where we are. When the Israelites escaped from slavery in Egypt and spent years wandering around the wilderness, they started to complain. At least in Egypt, we knew what the day would hold and where our food was coming from. There didn't seem to be much direction happening in the middle of the desert. We might even want to enlist God to the cause of resisting change. The hymn "Abide with Me" is very popular. We sing it in memorial services, even at football matches. I have a reaction to it when I hear it. Change and decay in all around I see. O thou who changest not, abide with me. For me, this picture of an unchanging God is not always a helpful one. It's true, as far as I can see what's true, that God does not change character or purpose. If God is love, then God is always love. But this always of God is a continual movement, an ever-flowing stream, rather than an unyielding rock. And there is a sense that to be in relationship with God is to be subject to change, or better perhaps, continually exposed to invitations to choose life. The Gospels tell this story. Jesus called people to follow him, to turn round their lives, to welcome life. And so many found that hard to hear or to respond to. One way of thinking about our creeds, you know, those statements of our core beliefs as Christians, is as rocks that we can lash the boat of our individual and collective lives to, so we don't have to move. But I think the creeds are about movement and full movement. So when we say that God is a creator, what we mean is that here and now, God is acting creatively to draw us from nothingness into the fullness of our being. God is always choosing to come alongside. So when we hear those words around incarnation, the word becoming flesh with us, we might contemplate how wherever we are, God is alongside us. God is always redemptive, labouring to set us free and make us whole, whatever our current tangle might be, whatever our present hurt. And God is always relational, drawing us into a life that's around giving and receiving, pouring out and gathering in. When I think about that always life of God, the picture that comes to mind is one given by the prophet Ezekiel. He imagines a river flowing from the house of God, so deep it's impossible to cross, and so purposeful that its fresh waters flow into all the dry earth and all the salt marsh, wherever it goes, renewing and refreshing life, so that trees grow by the riverside, bearing food for eating and leaves for healing. To be in relationship with God is to experience the flow of this stream into every nook and cranny of our past and our present. So one question to reflect on is this. Where is the river of the Spirit, the Lord, the giver of life, within what you are experiencing now? As you begin to sense that, will you go with its flow? These are times of change, perhaps times for change. What movement is invited of you? Perhaps all you have to go on is a sense of direction rather than a detailed route map. And perhaps that's how it should be. Change takes time to work through. Here then are three pictures that might resonate with that sense of possible new directions amidst the fog and clouds of uncertainty. On my desk, I have a postcard of a Van Gogh picture. Its title is Undergrowth. The forms of the painting are quite indistinct. The trees emerge from a confusion of emerging shoots from the ground. Hold for a moment that word, undergrowth. What is growing below your normal line of sight? What depths of your own spirit and God's spirit in your spirit are beginning to surface, inviting your attention? Maybe it's a restlessness you are accustomed to push away. Or is it a deep down desire, some expression of yourself that longs to be free and to see the light? At a time when I was deeply aware of needing to change but not knowing how to begin, I found myself rearranging my living space. I wanted to get rid of all the heavy furniture that drained light and space from my home. Sometimes when we make outward physical changes, it helps to unlock the elusive inner change that we're seeking. So perhaps you might rearrange a room, or a garden space, or a cupboard, or even a drawer. It can help loosen bonds. It can create momentum. Or you might find this imaginative exercise helpful. Picture your life as it was, perhaps before lockdown, as a room. In your imagination, go into the room and look around. What is the room like? What does it feel like to be in it? Is it cluttered or underfurnished, light or dark? What's in the room and how are those things arranged? What dominates the room? Perhaps it's a large work desk or a table where people sit round, or a cupboard stuffed with memories from your past. Now imagine the room clear, as if you were redecorating and you've taken everything out and you've even taken down the old curtains or blinds. Everything's bare. Now imagine you're going to order the room again. Are you going to put everything back just as it was? Perhaps there are some items you want to leave behind. Are there new things you want to bring into your room? Do you want to change the feel of it, to create more light or space, or give the room a different focus? In your imagination, you can be as radical as you like. You might find it helpful, as well as thinking about those things, to draw your old room or your new room or paint it, and to talk with God about what emerges for you. The third picture is a biblical one, the person of Nicodemus, a Pharisee. He's a teacher of the law, a man used to having answers and giving them. At this moment, he is really thrown. He's met Jesus, a preacher outside the normal framework of religious observance. He shouldn't be attracted to him, and yet he is. He goes to Jesus by night, and I think that reflects a deep darkness of unknowing and confusion that he's experiencing. The conversation with Jesus doesn't help in the moment. Jesus gives him two puzzling images. The first is saying to Nicodemus that he must be reborn. And Nicodemus says very reasonably, well, can a grown man do that? Can he go back into his mother's womb? Can he begin again? The second, Jesus talks about the wind, how you feel the wind, but you don't know where the wind is coming from or where it's going. And that's how it is, he says, of those born of the Spirit. Maybe that's how it is for us now. No definite answers, but an inexplicable sense of something dying and something being born. No detailed map to follow, but the sound of a breeze that has purpose and direction, if only we can begin to be open to it. The Bible begins with the account in the book of Genesis of how a wind from God moves over the void and the darkness and creates life. How is the Spirit moving over the darkness, perhaps even the emptiness of what your life is like at the moment? What is the Spirit creating? Next week, we'll go on to explore how we can notice and follow the direction of this creative Spirit. I'm going to end in a moment with a poem. Before I do so, you'll find some resources, some exercises to help go on thinking on the St. Augustine's College of Theology website, so you might use those during the week. The poem is called The Door, and it's by Miroslav Holub. He invites us to go and open the door and see what's there. And maybe that's a good spirit to begin with as we explore what's stirring in our lives. The door. Go and open the door. Maybe outside there's a tree, or a wood, a garden, or a magic city. Go and open the door. Maybe a dog's rummaging. Maybe you'll see a face, or an eye, or the picture of a picture. Go and open the door. If there's a fog, it will clear. Go and open the door. Even if there's only the darkness ticking, even if there's only the hollow wind, even if nothing is there, go and open the door. At least there'll be a draught.